Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Test Talks. I'm your host, Joe, from joecolantonio.com, and this is a podcast for anyone who wants to discover how to succeed with testing and automation, as well as what works for testing any software development project. Today's episode is sponsored by Sauce Labs. Sauce Labs makes test automation awesome. Our cloud-based Selenium Grid helps developers test web and mobile apps across more than 400 browser and OS platforms. Sauce also supports Appium and popular JavaScript unit testing frameworks and integrates with all the top programming languages, test frameworks, and CI systems. With built-in video recording, debugging tools, and secure tunneling for firewall testing, Sauce helps you ship better software faster. Sign up now at saucelabs.com/signup. Select the free Your Plan option and click the link I have a promo code to enter Test Talks 14 to get 20 hours of automated testing for free for a plan that never expires. As you just heard, I'm really excited to announce that Test Talks is now exclusively sponsored by Sauce Labs. Not only is Sauce Labs a cool company, but they have an awesome service that I think anyone listening to this podcast could benefit from. So I'm proud to have them as a sponsor and think they are a perfect fit for this show. So I have a quick question for you. Do you need to automate both browser-based and window-based applications? Not sure what tool to use? I think one of the most overlooked tools for test automation is Microsoft's Coded UI. In this episode, Marcel DeVries, author of Pluralsight course Test Automation with Coded UI, will help us discover all the reasons why Coded UI might be the perfect tool for you to use to help create your automation awesomeness. So check it out. Hey, Marcel. Welcome to Test Talks.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Marcel, before we get started, can you just tell us a little bit more about yourself?
So my name is Marcel DeVries. I live in the Netherlands, and I work for a company called Xperit. We just started this company 2 weeks ago now, so we just are our new startup now. And we primarily focus on high-end consulting in the continuous delivery space.
Today, I'd really like to cover your excellent Pluralsight course called Test Automation with Coded UI. But before we jump into it, in a nutshell, what is Coded UI?
Coded UI is test technology for test automation for the Windows platform. So you can automate your tests for WPF applications, so Windows Presentation Foundation, that is, for Windows Forms application, Windows 32 applications, and of course also the web application. So you can test in browsers. So you can test web applications in Internet Explorer or even Chrome and Firefox.
Very cool. I didn't know it actually handled mobile applications also. So for the cross-browser functionality, what technology does it use to actually automate the browser?
Yeah, so it's funny. So what Microsoft has done is so Coded UI is an API which you can program against. And this API is a common programming API across all these technologies. So it does not really matter if you're targeting WPF applications or targeting web applications. You still code up the code the exact same way. And the way they do this is they provide this more or less driver infrastructure, which they call the technology manager layer. And there they provide plugins for WPF or for the WinForm stuff, but they also provide a plugin for the web tests. Now, for web tests, they have this special case they handle because out of the box in the past, Coded UI only handled Internet Explorer. But since 2012, they now also support targeting Chrome and Firefox browsers. And the great thing is that they are leveraging the Selenium tools for that. So what you do is you install this little plugin, cross-browser tools for Coded UI. And you can download them from the Microsoft Visual Studio Gallery. And once you install them, what they do is they install this little thin layer that bridges the standard driver they have for Internet Explorer onwards to use or leverage the Selenium tools underneath. So all of a sudden, we can now also target then the Chrome and the Firefox browsers, but still having the same API. So we don't need to code anything up for that. The only thing we need to do is we need to say which browser do we want to use, and it will switch browsers underneath the covers for us.
Wow, very neat. Actually, in your course, you have a very helpful chart of the understanding of the underlying technology that maps this all out that I found really helpful.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, well, it was quite challenging to make people really aware of how this technology works, because otherwise you might think, wow, why do I need to do these kinds of things in setting up my tests? But that all has to do with this overarching architecture that CodeQI has. And CodeQI also goes one step further in terms of also scaling out your tests. So it's also able to scale out to a complete test rig that you might have either in the cloud or on-prem, and then just fan out your tests to those multiple machines and then collect it later. And for that, it integrates with the whole Visual Studio ALM tool suite.
Awesome. Now, is there one particular language within Visual Studio you need to use for coded UI, or can you use any of the languages? Can you use F#, for example, to do coded UI tests?
Well, it's a very good question. To be honest, I'm not sure if I could use F#. I've never tried that. I know you can use both VB and C#.NET.
So what version of Visual Studio do you need to actually use coded UI?
At the moment, they are looking at licensing, so there will be some announcements made within a couple of weeks. Cannot elaborate that on that at the moment. But if we take the state as today, so that's, what is it, the 2nd of November 2014, then I can say that the free tools do not include coded UI. You need to have Visual Studio Professional or up, or have the Visual Studio test SKU. There's a specific test SKU that you can use that also contains coded UI. And you need to have the 2010 version or above. So since 2010, they support coded UI out of the box. And since 2012, you can then leverage the cross-browser stuff.
Excellent. And I just want to remind the people listening that this is all covered within your course. I'm just highlighting some of the things that I think people are going to want to know before they actually dive in. What are the different ways that coded UI can automate our UI test?
First process you can take is record and playback. Now, record and playback is something that I always love in terms of demonstrations, but I hate in terms of using actually in practice. It's a great way to demo that you can do test automation, but I consider that as more or less a guarantee for failure, I would say it, if you take that approach. Since record and playback really hard codes everything in the recorded files, and once you try to playback stuff, that always works on your machine, but once you try to play it back on someone else's machine or on your test rig, then it fails because some prerequisites were not in place, or it used, for example, the click on an icon instead of actually starting the browser in an appropriate way. So yeah, so that's what you can use. Now, if you look at what the recording actually does, it captures everything it finds on the screen. And then there's a little layer within the architecture that tries to convert all your clicks into more or less intents. So for example, if I would click an Internet Explorer icon on my desktop and then go to a certain URL, it will convert those different types of clicks into the intent that I want to start a browser. So it understands those kinds of things already within Windows, which is good. So it translates then into an XML file, and that XML file contains three different parts. So it contains more or less the way it can find particular controls on your screen. It also contains so-called action sequences. So those are the steps that you have done using those controls that it can find. And then the third is you can also add what we call assertions to your file. And an assertion is that you want to check, for example, that a certain text box on the screen has a particular text in there. Now, the problem I have with these files is that there's three in one, and therefore also a little bit tricky if it comes to maintainability, because if only a part of your UI changes, then all of a sudden I need to re-record the sequences because my controls are now on a different location. So like I said, using record and playback is a little bit of a fragile approach of doing your test automation. Now, since we have the XML files, we can still leverage those files because it contains, for example, the locators for the controls, and those might be very convenient to use. So in my course, I go to, in extent, I would say, that you can apply a pattern to your tests, which is called the page object pattern. And if you use that pattern, then all of a sudden you can say, well, I'm coding up each step in my application or in my test automation into different what we call objects. And one of those objects can then be backed by such a record file. So if you would go and, for example, do a Google search and we would create an automation for that, then I could create, for example, two or three pages for that. Like I would go down to Google and then find the search box and type some text in the search box. Then I click on enter, I get search results. So that would result in a second page object that then covers the results. And then when I click on one of the results, I go to that target page. So I might split that up in three different objects that I would like to go through. Now, when you're using the record playback mechanism, then you would record a file for just... So first we have like page object that we would create for entering the search criteria. Then we would create a page object for the second part, which is then showing the results. And then I should create a third page object, which then contains like the targeting page that we go to. And when we use record and playback, I can then say, well, I'm recording only entering the data into my Google search page first, and I would save that off as one recording file. Then I would create a second file that contains then clicking on the results page. And then I create a third recording file that then contains clicking on the result link and going to that target page. And there, for example, asserting on the fact that my domain all of a sudden is pluralsight.com when I was searching for, let's say, Coded UI courses. Now, then you have these three recording files, and I try to use only the control locators in that particular case, because sometimes it's convenient that when there were changes in your UI, the only thing you then need to do is re-record where that control is located on your screen, and then still can leverage that recording file. So that would be the second approach that you would have. So using the record files, but only partially, and then still splitting them up in such a way that they become maintainable. Because if I would do it in one gigantic recording file, then when one of these three pages changes a bit, I all of a sudden need to record all my scenarios. When I split it up in three pages, then I can only change that one page. Now, my favorite way of working with Coded UI is not using the record at all. And the reason for that is because the Coded UI APIs are very simple to use. The only thing you need to do is you need to new up a control that you're actually looking for. So let's say, for example, I'm looking for the search box on a Google page. So what I would do is I would just browse to Google, then use the F12 tools in Chrome or in IE, and then look up what is the identifier of that search box. And then the only thing I need to do is I need to new up this particular HTML edit box, then provide it with the value search criteria. So a search criteria is I want to search on ID, or I want to search on a cascading style sheet class, or I want to search on, well, whatever property you can find in that window. And then after that, I'm just going to say, well, find control. Or I'm just going to manipulate that control by saying, well, I would like to enter the text on that control. So I would have my control.text and then equals a particular text that I need. And then just using that property on that control will trigger the search in the browser window. And the only thing you need to do is you need to, when you new up these controls, you need to provide them the search scope. So if you don't provide any search scope, it will search your whole desktop. But for example, when I started a browser window, then I can provide that browser window class that I get back when I start the application as the search scope of the second control. And if I would go out and search, for example, for a particular div on that page, then I can use that div control in a later state as being the search scope for any additional controls that might be in that div container. Does it make sense?
It does. And it is, once again, all covered in your course, and you have examples, hands-on examples, where I think you actually show each method. So it sounds like there's three main methods. There's record and playback, recording UI maps, and handle code object model is the last one you talked about. You also mentioned page objects. So I know most people listening to this are probably more familiar with Selenium, and Selenium always seems to promote using the page object best practice.
I see two parts of the page object patterns here. So the one part is abstracting away your UI so that the interaction is captured within these page objects. So you split up your application within, let's say, functional parts that make sense and have a certain type of coherence. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, and that has to do with the way you code up these page objects, is that you provide the tester or the one that writes the test scenario with a fluent API. Because page objects, when you look at a page and you see, for example, something that is really an action on your page. So let's say, for example, clicking a link. So when you click that link, you would convert that to a certain method on your page object called, for example, click result link on my Google page or something like that. So click result page would be an action that I would create, so a method that I would create on the page object. And then that page object method will return a new page object of the target location where it goes to. So when I click on the search results, then I would return like a result page object. And then on that page, I can do additional actions. For example, check if the URL is where I expect it to go, for example. And then I can add an additional method to that page object that has something like is page on URL, and I provide it or I pass it in the URL that I'm checking on. Now, the great thing about that is that all of a sudden you're writing your tests as if they were just in an English language. This is also called damp testing, right? So descriptive and meaningful phrases. So with a page object pattern, you're not only abstracting away your UI that you want to test, but you also provide all of a sudden the test scenarios with a way of writing those damn tests and not having to do a lot of maintenance when stuff changes in your application, because the intent is still the same. You still want to go to, let's say, I want to search on the web, I want to see the results, and I go to the end result of what I found. And those are the three steps that don't really change if I would switch, for example, to Bing. And I can then all of a sudden make a simple implementation where I would go to Bing instead of Google, change a little bit the controls that it's looking for, and I could do exactly the same test. And the test itself does not really have to be changed in terms of the scenario. The only thing you do is you make some changes in those page objects.
Awesome. Now, before we even start coding a UI test, I think you really hit this in pretty much right after the introduction of your course. So in your experience, when should we create a UI automation test, and when should we avoid it?
So in my opinion, I try to avoid UI tests as much as possible because they're the most fragile to use. In my course, I go into what I call more or less a test automation pyramid. And at the bottom of that pyramid, you see that you try to automate all your tests as much as possible as being unit tests, because unit tests are very fast to run. You can create them in more or less the same technology than you're using other types of tests, at least within the Microsoft space. And you can run them very frequently. You can run them like on every build that you do. And if you have a continuous integration set up, you can even automate these test runs at every build that is being triggered by CI. So if you go one step above that, then you are more or less at what I would call the API layer or the integration layer or integration testing. So we have at the bottom side the unit tests that really look at code units. And then one level above that, we look at integration testing, API level testing. And API level testing is something that you can very nicely do with exact same technologies with just unit test frameworks. The only thing is you don't need to be so religious about what unit testing is all about. Because if you look at the unit testing space, then a lot of people always say, well, you need to test only the minimal unit and it only needs to take up a couple of milliseconds to do that test. Well, if you go one level higher, then you need to set up some stuff. For example, you might need to set up your whole application to actually operate in some way that it actually hits a database and actually provides this API, and you're really calling into that API. Now, if you do that, then you can just use the unit test frameworks for that and just code away that you're setting up the database and then hitting that API, and then still can do the validations of that. So what you will see is that you go a little bit higher in the pyramid, and the test times that you take might take up a little bit more time in that particular case. Now, one step above that, I place the UI tests. So those are the tests that you cannot do without clicking the user interface. And one thing that I find very important is when I show people that they can do test automation of the UI, all of a sudden they try to do, let's say, validations if a certain calculation on the screen was correct or not. And in my opinion, that needs to be down at the bottom. That should be something that would be in a unit test type of test. And if you look at coded UI or at the UI level testing, what you should do there is, for example, validate that the color of that particular value is now in red because it's a negative value, for example. So UI tests are there to validate if the UI is valid or not, and is not there to validate if your business rules are triggering yes or no. So that's like the UI layer. And then I still have one layer above the UI layer, and that's what I call just manual testing. I still think that there is just some stuff that's not economically feasible to actually automate. Although that might be a little bit of an issue when you try to strive for continuous delivery and try to deliver straight from your code base onto production, because then still you need the manual testing in between. But on the other hand, yes, sometimes just stuff is very hard to test. And then it makes sense to just have a guy have a look at it and then validate that like in 2 or 3 minutes instead of setting up a test that takes up weeks to code and is very fragile.
Awesome. Yeah, I definitely agree with this approach. And for some reason, I always meet a lot of resistance for this. For some reason, managers are really fixated on the UI. And I work in a regulatory environment. And for some reason, they're hung up that, no, our users are using the UI. And I'm saying, well, we're testing the business logic with an API. It's testing it. So I don't understand why you still want a UI test for it.
Yeah, so the important discussion I have with managers on that part is that I say, well, what is it that you find important, that you really decide on what we automate in which way? Or do you find it more important that we just code up our stuff in a most efficient way? And if you just let us handle technology, you can handle when you go more into that direction of a discussion and say, well, we are there to just provide as much value in as short as time as possible, but let us handle if we're going to use UI testing or unit testing or what else. Most of the time, by showing them some of that stuff, I can really convince them in that space. And the other thing that's very important, and that is also has to do with when people learn something new and they see something that they really like, for example, that they all of a sudden are able to automate their UI tests, they see that like the nail and the hammer, right? They all of a sudden want to, yeah, use everything the same way, and then all of a sudden start doing UI testing for anything. I've seen people that are starting to automate their continuous delivery just by leveraging UI tests to drive some of the installations, for example. And I think that that's going to set you on a path that is perhaps very nice on the short term, but long term, that is probably not the road you should pick there.
Excellent advice. So do you have any tips on how to create a maintainable, reusable test automation framework using Coded UI or pretty much any test automation framework?
My approach on that is that I really encourage people to use the page object pattern. I really encourage people to do those fluent APIs and write those damn tests. Because if you do that, then I would say that your automation layer is way, way, way more maintainable than just doing any other type of patterns that you might already know. Now, the other thing is that you need to keep aware of is that your UI test or your test code in general, you should treat it the exact same way as you do your production code. So as you learn at your, I would say, 101 classes on how do we write maintainable code, is that you adhere to the solid principles, like single responsibility is one of the most important parts if you're doing object-oriented programming. So you really need to treat your test code as it is your production code and do not start copying, pasting around everything. You just refactor that into small methods that you can then reuse and be very specific about the test that you write and adhere to those solid principles as well. The other thing is that my advice is really try to keep away from those UI files and those recordings. In my course, I provide an example where I show how you can write the tests using the Coded UI recording files, and I show how you can do it just by hand coding. My personal preference is the hand coding because, yeah, I see that still the recording of the controls sometimes can be just too specific. And when you just try to do it yourself, then by finding out in the UI what IDs you need to search for, then you have a better feel of how fragile that particular test might be. Now, the last tip I have is that if you follow this page object pattern, then if you're working in Scrum teams and you work with this notion of I'm providing a story and then I'm doing like a definition of done, then your definition of done should also contain the test automation. So let's say, for example, that we have a group of developers that built this Google search thing. Then you should make it like the definition of done that the page object for, let's say, the search page is also being changed as part of a change that you might make in that particular search page. So the story might be that on your search page, you want to have, let's say, not only a textbook where you can search for text, but also for numbers. Then the page object that is more or less the counterpart on the test side also needs to contain those changes. so that your tests keep running. And then the definition I've done is that your UI test also keeps running after you make the change. And I always try to make the page objects the responsibility of the developers as well within that team. And that way, your automation more or less grows with the application. And you're not handing it really off to like a test department and all of a sudden needs to do all this rework, because if you're not incorporating that change in your page objects, then you're more or less giving other people the burden of making that change. They did not talk to you. They don't know what the change was that you made. And you're really adding a lot of more time that's being consumed to fix those tests. And the side benefit of making developers responsible for the page objects is also that all of a sudden they now start realizing that they should add identifiers to their controls, so they're easy to be found on the screen. And your tests then become way and way more resilient to any changes that are made in the UI when you're using those IDs or those identifiers that then are set up by those developers. Or they might provide even some additional divs that you then can find on as a search container to speed up those tests. And developers are very smart about that. And you see that if you make it their responsibility to deliver the page objects as well, you will see that your test code as a whole becomes way more professional and better maintainable.
I love it. I love that advice. The problem is it's really hard sometimes to get developers to buy into that. But like you said, if they do take on the responsibility, they stop baking in almost automation into the tool, so it makes it easier to automate. So that's really where you need to start, I think. So I definitely agree with that point. So this may be kind of a similar question that I just asked, but from a different perspective. Is there one thing you see over and over again in your experience that most people creating test automation are doing wrong?
I would say that what I see over and over again is that people just start using the technology without really reading into it and not understanding this technology in terms of you're trying to test the UI and focus on what you need to validate in the UI. And I see constantly that people are using UI tests to validate their business logic and, for example, flow in their APIs and all that stuff. Well, I would say that's not what you should do at the UI automation layer. You should do that at the API level. So the most common made mistake is that I see that UI testing is used for the wrong purpose.
Excellent. Yeah. Once again, I totally agree with you. You're speaking my language now. So,
well, great.
Are there any resources or books that you would recommend to help someone to get started then with test automation or coded UI?
Yeah. So if you just go to the MSDN pages, which is on msdn.microsoft.com, you can learn and read a lot about UI or coded UI in general. I also recommend you to look at the Selenium pages on page objects and how they are built in a more generic way. And of course, I can recommend to take the Pluralsight course online. And one of the things that I'm currently working on is a new course on Pluralsight, which is going to be focused on web testing, where I will show off a lot of stuff that I just learned over the years using coded UI and web testing. And that course will be out, I hope, by January. And that's focused on specifically web testing. So people that are only doing focus on web testing can then leverage from that a little bit more than going through a whole like generic part for WPF, Windows Forms, and that kind of stuff.
Awesome. I definitely recommend anyone who hasn't taken a Pluralsight course to head on over and especially check out Marcel's course on testing UI, coded UI. Awesome. So switching gears just a little bit, I noticed that in one of your profiles, it says that Marcel spends most of his time looking at how new emerging technologies can help organizations build better quality software and do this in a more productive way. So my question is there any piece of technology you feel is really going to take off in the coming years that test automation engineers need to be aware of?
So I think that in general, what you see is that at the moment, the trend in our industry is using continuous delivery pipelines. And you see in that space, that's really where continuous delivery is now starting to get traction. And you see a lot of products in that particular space is now coming out. Now, I don't want it to be like an advertisement for our new company, but our company is part of what we call the Xebia Group. And within the Xebia Group, there's Xebia Labs. And one of the products they are building there, and that might be very interesting for testers to have like an overall view of what the test status is of your product that you're testing that might be comprised out of, let's say, some Java code, some .NET code, some other technologies that you're using like Scala or Angular or whatever. they provide within Xebia Labs this product that is like an overview across all the test technologies that you're using, and based on that, giving insights on what the status is and the quality is of your product. And I see in that space that there are new tools coming out. Xebia Labs is one of them that provides this technology today. And it's like a tool that can suck up all the information about unit tests, API tests, UI framework tests, all kind of tests from different technologies like JUnit or Coded UI or, well, you name it, Selenium, for example, Fitness. And they suck that up and give this holistic view onto your continuous delivery pipelines. And I see that at the moment in our industry, we're trying to strive for providing a better continuous flow. And with that, you see that application lifecycle tools like Team Foundation Server in the Microsoft space or the Jira, Atlassian Jira tools that are out there with Jenkins as build tools, they are now at a moment that they're ramping up to provide this more like integrated, holistic view on what is it that my, so where is my product, what's the quality of my product, and am I ready to ship? And what you see is that test automation is one of the most important parts as a quality gate, getting your sources or your product actually deployed to production. You see now more and more that coded UI tests or test automation in general is now being used as the quality gate into your production environment, and people only checking those reports and then say, yes, we're good to go, and we'll just ship it and move it to production. Or otherwise, we hold it off here because stuff is failing at the moment. In that space, it's really exciting to see that there are so many new tools coming out there. And also, the tools now have more like a holistic approach, and they don't try to corner you into a specific technology, but they provide you more like insights across these different technologies and technology stacks that are out there. And also, Microsoft sees that in their products as well. They're not only targeting and focused on the Windows platform, but especially what you see with Azure and all the Linux stuff going on there, and the new deployment tools and Docker and all that stuff is now out there providing better ways to do this continuous integration pipelines is really exciting technology that I see emerging at the moment. And there's a lot of new cool stuff coming out there in that space.
Okay, Marcel, before we go, is there one piece of actionable advice you can give someone to improve their coded UI automation efforts? And let us know the best way to find out or contact you.
So the best way to contact me or find me is reach me at Twitter, at Marcel V. I most of the time try to respond within one day. So that's certainly something to just do. Follow me, catch me on Twitter, and I will really try to be as quick as possible. In terms of using Coded UI, I would keep an eye on one thing that will be announced, if all goes well, next week or the week after that, regarding the licensing part of all this stuff, because it might be the case that it's being opened up for many other SKUs within a couple of weeks. That making Coded UI as a very interesting platform to do your UI test, because all of a sudden you cannot only do web tests, but you can also do different types of tests for WPF, Windows Forms, or Win32. And yeah, I really would like to emphasize that please learn the APIs. If you look at the APIs, they are not very complex to learn, and start just coding them by hand. That really provides the most value for the bucket.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm very excited about Coded UI, especially if they start opening up to more people. Currently, I have a Java framework that it's written in Selenium, but we also have thick client applications. So now we're having a problem where, you know, I'm kind of cut and pasting different technologies to get to work. If I started in Coded UI, I probably would have been better off. But
so one of the things you need to be aware of with Coded UI is that for Java applications, that might not work. And the reason for that is that Java really paints their windows themselves, and they're not really using Windows. So be aware of that as well. For Java, there's a company called FrogLogic that provides plugins that tie into the Coded UI space.
That is great. Thank you so much, and have fun in Seattle. Hopefully the rest of your day and the rest of your week is excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you for having me on. It's really awesome to learn this podcast, and I'm now starting to listen to it in the car as well. So pretty awesome. Thank you for all your efforts in that space. It's really great.
Thanks, Marcel, for a great interview, and thank you for listening. I appreciate every one of you. And don't forget to check out our new sponsor, Sauce Labs. Just a heads up, in order to use the TestTalks14 promo code, the sign-up is a little tricky. So I've created a video and PDF resource on how to sign up at www.testtalks14.com www.testtalks.com underneath the Sauce Lab sponsorship area. And unlike the standard plan, which expires after 14 days, this plan will never expire. Now that's what I call automation sawsomeness. You can find the links to everything of value that we talked about today in the show notes at www.testtalks.com/27. And as always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.